Kelly Matlock here, and we are going to get rolling and live right here on 99.7 this afternoon, and I will be taking your questions regarding your money. I've been doing this for, 35 years. I started as a kid at 23 years old and got involved in this kind of business and worked and built a business helping people with their money, and I do that kind of stuff. And so the goal of the show is to get you, the listener, educated, because once you get educated, winning the money game is not so difficult. I mean, it's just a simple little formula called quality of life. And the quality of life is the difference between your income and your outgo. That gap is the quality. And so our goal on the show is to get you a quality of life that is suitable for you. And we do that kind of stuff. And also we talk about making money and business. So if you're a small business person and you are trying to get it going, you can do the same thing. Give us a call, 737-9986 at 615-737-9986. And I'm going to start today. I've got a good show lined up that will take you through the steps, the three D's of you know, investing, as well as how do you go about getting started? And then if you're at or near retirement, what are you going to do? Because you got to make good decisions. You know, I read an article just here the last few days where a guy was a big attorney here in Nashville, 108 years old. And, you know, if you lived 108, that's wonderful. I mean, I'd love to live to 108 if I could be healthy. And they said he went into the office, and I read that article. I thought he's still going in there mentoring people. And he just passed away. But, you know, the thing about it is if you run out of money when you're 80, 108 would not be a great fate. And so what you want to do is put yourself in a position to where you have that FIN number, that financial independence number. And that financial independence number is the number that you need to have in order for you to be financially independent. That's your financial independence number, and that's the money you live on from then on out. And so what's the first thing I always tell people? Well, you get paid always for what you know and what you do. And in the case with getting ahead financially, it's what you know, which I teach people, and you guys that are listening right now clearly have a goal of learning, or you wouldn't be on here out there listening to the show. And so that's the knowledge base. How do you go about doing that? You develop success habits where every single day, you know, you should be reading something or listening to something, because, you know, money controls so many of our actions, and, you know, that we have everything we do, you know, has some cost to it, and it's usually a financial cost. And so anyway, so I would encourage you to develop some success habits. Tune into podcasts. You can listen to, I've got, I think, 15 shows right now on my website, roymatlockjr.com, and you can listen to the prior shows, the podcast, and stuff like that. But go in there and search for money solutions, and you can get some great, you know, time spent when you're going to and from your office and things like that. And so you want to take and develop those kind of things, get the knowledge base, and ask yourself, if I repeat what I did today or every day, how would it turn out for me financially? Would it be good or bad? If I repeat what I did today as it relates to my career, would it be good or bad? And the goal is to get bulletproof. So we're going to work on getting bulletproof today. And getting bulletproof is having sources of income that cause you to, and net worth that cause you to be debt-free and financially independent and have a lifetime income. And so let's start out. You know, the call-in number is 737-9986. I'm going to start with the first thing that I learned when it came to money, and that was something called the Rule of 72. The Rule of 72 is the mathematical formula that can give you an idea in your head what a lump sum investment would end up doing if you put it to work for you at different interest rates. When I first heard this, I thought, wow, if I got 3% on my money, if I doubled it to 6%, I would double my money. Well, it doesn't work that way. Or if I were able to get 9%, I'd triple my money. It doesn't work that way. So let me give you the Rule of 72, and we're going to base all that, and that's the starting point of understanding the fundamentals. The Rule of 72 says if you take any interest rate, divide it into the number 72, it will tell you how at compound interest your money, how long it'll take you to double. So let me give an example. If you're a 3%er and you put your money in at 3%, Divide that into 72. In 24 years, your money doubles. So if you had a $10,000 investment, in 24 years, it would double. And in 48 years, it would double again. Or if you got 1%, say you went to the bank right now and you got 1%, that means that a $10,000 investment would double in approximately 72 years. And so if you start right now, 72 years from now, you'll double your money. So it's hard to get ahead when you don't get the power of compound interest working for you. Now, if you get 6%, that same $10,000 investment will double in 12 years. And it will double every 12 years. So it's 10, 20, 40, 80, 160 over 48 years. So now rather than having 40,000, you have 160,000. You doubled your rate. Didn't have to work any harder for it, but now you've got four times more money. If you get 9%, you tripled your rate, but the difference is the difference in 40,000 and 640,000. So 16 times more money. But only three times the rate. So the first rule of getting ahead is you got to understand the magic of compound interest, and you need to learn how to apply that. Now, let me give you some examples on applying that. Let's say I had $10,000 right now, and you took that money and you blew it on something that was unnecessary. You took it, took that rather than putting it to work for you. You put it to something that went down in value. And so that 6%, at 6%, that $10,000 didn't cost you $10,000. In 12 years, it actually cost you $20,000. Over a 24-year period, it cost you $40,000. Over 36, it cost you $80,000. So every time we do things, it's called opportunity cost. What are we doing with our money? Are we going to spend it or are we going to save it? That's the question. Are we going to spend it or save it? If you make those choices, you say, I want to get debt-free and financial independent. I want to move forward. Well, then I'm going to save it. I'm going to invest it. If I want to stay broke, I'm going to spend it. And so every day we make those decisions. And in many cases, I know in my case, my investment account, one of the funds that I have is right on my phone. And all I got to do is make that decision. Do I want to spend $20 extra today, or $30 or $50, whatever, going out to dinner, or do I want to save it? If I want to save it, I pull my phone out. I say, hey, I'm putting it in there right now. Hit it. Few seconds later, guess what happens? My money goes into, I get a confirmation statement from my fund saying, you just put $50 in. I go home that night, and guess what happened? I actually did save it. Now, you know, we've got every way under the sun to spend it. We can do PayPal. We can do Amazon. I mean, Amazon, you ought to be a billionaire if you have somebody that creates an application where all you got to do is sell something to somebody anywhere in the world 24 hours a day right from their phone. I mean, golly, you know, that guy's done a great job of taking our money. But what are you doing to get your money going? So anyway, what's the easiest way to get started? Well, the first thing is you've got to understand where you're going to put it. All right, there's three basic fundamental accounts that I recommend people have. The first one's an emergency fund. The second one is a short-term account or a future purchase fund. And then the last one is your long-term plan. That would be your wealth building account. So we have three separate accounts. When I first got started, I had no idea what to do with my money. So what I did, I had everything in my checking account. I might have had a little savings account, and you know, I thought if I had $500 that I was doing good. You know, right now most people are living paycheck to paycheck. They don't have anything set aside. So the first step is you get an emergency fund. You know, maybe 3 months of your income, it's in just a separate little account. It might be a savings account. I don't care where you put it. I mean, if you've got 3 months of emergency cash, it could be under the mattress. I wouldn't necessarily do that. But the bottom line is it's an emergency fund in the event that you have an emergency. Now, what's an emergency? It isn't to go buy something. It's an emergency, like you lose a job or you have a major setback, something like that. And so we have that. Then we have a short-term account. That's an additional account separate from, it's planned out. You know, our tires are going to wear out, our car is going to need to be replaced, we're probably going to go on vacation, and Christmas comes the same time every single year that you need to have money for that. And so you set that money aside. How do we do that? I put it into a draft account. I always tell people you have all your money going into one account. It's called a draft account, and that one, all of your income goes in there, and everything is drafted. And one of the drafts is your savings, all right, for future purchases. And then we have a separate account that is for weekly expenses. So we move that money out each week in order to set a budget up. We live on just 1 week's variable spending. And then from there, we have all of our bills coming out of that. That would include the most important bill, which is the bill to yourself, which is your retirement plan. Then we go to the long-term wealth building account. That's your IRA, your retirement plans through work, a lot of different things like that. We have all kinds of different plans like that. We have Roth IRAs. We have traditional IRAs. So your different retirement plans are like that. So, for instance, you might do a Roth IRA. A lot of people take advantage of Roth IRAs because a couple of benefits of Roth. One is that they grow tax-free. You never have to do what is called an RMD. An RMD is a required minimum distribution, so you don't have to do that. And then you can put that money aside. Put $500 a month is basically what you can do, a little bit more than that. And you know what happens? You start accumulating money. When we come back, what we're going to do is talk about the different type of retirement plans. Where should you put it? And then we're going to get into how to pull your money out, all those kind of things. 615-737-9986. Roy Matlack Jr. will be right back. Roy Matlack back here talking money. And when we first started here, we talked about the three fundamental accounts of starting your plan. And we're going to try to take you all the way to what are you going to do when you've accumulated all that money and you can quit one day. And so that's the goal today. I'm going to try to walk through the whole thing. But it starts with the foundation, and that is split it up. You know, get your accounts. You got your emergency fund. You got your future purchase account, which is designed for one thing and one thing only, to keep you from going in debt. So you pay cash for your cars and all those kind of things. And then you go into your long-term savings. We were talking before the break about Roth IRAs and traditional IRAs and things like that. And so with that being said, what is the difference in a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA? So the Roth is after tax. It grows tax-free. There's no RMD. You can generally, if you're qualified plan through your work, you can generally speaking earn more money and still be eligible to do a Roth IRA. Who would be more inclined to do it? I tend to tell people the younger you are, the better opportunity you have with a Roth IRA, because you have a longer period of time to put that money aside. And then a lot of times when people retire, there's the opportunity maybe to transfer it from a regular IRA once you retire to a Roth. And it may be that you get the benefits of the higher tax bracket while you're working and the lower tax bracket when you're not working, and then you convert it over. So, you know, a Roth IRA is something that everyone should look into, and it may be right for you. It may be a traditional IRA. Then you also have the opportunity to do what's called a 401k or maybe a 403b if you're, say, a teacher or you work for a municipality, things like that. Even what's called a 457 plan, that's a deferred compensation plan. But all these are things that allow you tax-deferred growth. And a 401k is pre-tax, or it can be a Roth 401k. Most of the 401ks I see, though, are our matching funds go into the pre-tax side, but you can actually do the Roth IRA 401k. A couple other things that a lot of people don't know is that once you reach 55, in most cases, you can do what's called an in-service distribution from your 401k. What that means is that whatever money's in there, you can at 55, and some of them are 59 and a half, you can take that money and roll it into your individual retirement account, even though you're still at the job. So the way a 401k works is it's a corporate plan, and then you can move it into your own personal plan. And so a lot of people do that. Why do they do it? Well, they maybe have better options, or they're comfortable with having an advisor to help them do that. And so, therefore, they move that money out of their 401k. They can continue to work there, continue to contribute. And the benefit of that is that you have, if you have a financial advisor or someone that you like working with, or maybe you have poor options through your work, you can do some things like that. So there's a lot of different things that go on with your retirement plans. And so, but you want to make sure you do that. Then we've got college funding. That's kind of last on the list. You know, when my daughter was born, I remember, couldn't wait the day she was born. I opened her up at that time, what was called an UGMA, U-G-M-A. Now they have UTMAs, a U-T-M-A. And then there's many others like ESAs and 529 plans. There's all these different plans. But here's the bottom line with them. All of them have something to do with helping people accumulate money for their children's college, and there's different tax benefits, and there's limitations on it. Most of the time I tell people, you know, if you're just getting started, you have a lot of money, then you're going to do an ESA. You might move into a 529 later if you put more money in. But the bottom line is that, you know, the college savings plan would be where we go. Then the question is, where do we put it? Well, we got a lot of different options. You can go to the bank, and I'm not a big believer of putting your money in the bank. And, you know, I always tell the story. It's called become an owner, not a loaner. And, you know, if we got a choice of loaning money out or owning the bank, I think I'd rather own the bank. But, you know, that's you have to look at everything. Everything has to be broad-based. I mean, I have people right now that, you know, I've run into that they have tons of money in the bank and they're so scared. Maybe that's the best thing for them. Very seldom does it mean they're going to make more money, but maybe that's the thing with them. But if you're in that situation, I would encourage you to get really educated, and then that way you can do so much better with it. But generally speaking, when we talk to people about their retirement plans, college plans, stuff like that, almost always it has to do with mutual funds. And a mutual fund is something that if you look at your 401k, there's probably all different types of mutual funds in there, and there's everything from bond funds, and that's where, you know, U.S. government bond funds or money market accounts. Those are very on the lower end of the risk scale. You've got corporate bonds. That's where big companies borrow money. We have junk bonds where companies that are still, you know, possibly very good companies, they just have had some prior credit troubles where they have to pay more interest in order to borrow money from the public. Those are called high yield funds or junk bond funds. And then from there, we move into what we call a balance fund. That would be a stock and bond fund. And then we go over to the other side. We have growth and income funds, large companies that pay dividends, and growth funds that, you know, are big companies, the Googles and stuff like that, that don't pay dividends, but they tend to, that you buy them with the idea that they'll grow. And what these funds do is they put your money across all of these type of investments. You know, you might buy a growth and income fund. It might have 200 or 300 growth and income stocks that pay dividends. Or you might buy an international fund. International fund will invest outside of the United States. So you get to take advantage of all these companies that do business with us that may appear to be U.S. companies like Nestle and Johnson & Johnson. Those are international companies that are not owned by U.S. They're not a U.S. company. And so in order to get those, you would either need to be in an international or global fund. Now, what's the difference in an international versus a global? Well, a global fund will invest worldwide, and an international fund will invest only outside the United States. Another little thing, if you buy the S&P 500, that's called an index fund. An index fund has about 30% of the revenue coming from outside the United States, the S&P 500, because hey, people are buying Apple computers all over the world and iPhones and things like that. So the point being is there's all different types of things. So what is some of what I tell people, and then you've got the aggressive funds, and these are just funds. Now, a fund is different than an individual stock. An individual stock, you buy XYZ company, McDonald's or whatever it is. And when you do that, that one stock can go up and it can go down. It's either up or down. It's not any in between. It's always up and down. But when you buy a fund might invest in 200 or 300 stocks or bonds or a combination thereof. And then they manage that along with you, mutually funding it. So you've got $50 a month. I'll never forget telling people, say, dude, do you realize that for $50 you can have professional money managers? All right, $50 a month. That's how I got started. I've opened up a mutual fund with $50 a month. This was 30 years ago. It took $100 to open a savings account at the bank, and I put it into professional money management and took that and was able to start out putting money in like that. And so then what they do is they pool it. So if you've got $50 or you've got $100,000 or $10 million, you get the exact same money management if you go on one of these mutual funds. And then what they do is, on average, some of them are a little more, some of them a little less, but about 1% is a typical management fee of a mutual fund. If you can get one a little bit lower, that's better. Low expenses mean you get to keep more, but you want to look at the overall performance. And so then what happens is the fund manager goes out there, and if they get 12 and you get 11, how about that? If they charge 1% and they put it all out there. So a mutual fund is one place. And there's other things that, you know, people put their money in. But for the most part, especially if you're in a 401k or stuff like that, very seldom do I see that many ETFs or things like that that we can talk. Those are exchange traded funds. So anyway, with all that being said, what we do then is we pick and choose where we want to go. Typically, you know, the longer time horizon that you have, you would be more aggressive. The shorter time horizon, you would be more conservative. If you're at or near retirement, you're going to be more conservative, generally speaking, than you would if you were 25 years old and had a long time to invest. And so we do that. And then we move in. So now we understand where we might put it. We've got retirement plans. Now, to clarify it, we'll call them qualified versus non-qualified, so we understand the difference. A mutual fund can be qualified or it can be non-qualified. What that means is that if it's qualified, it means it's in a retirement account. If it's non-qualified, it's not in a retirement account. And so we start with that. We kind of got an overall understanding. And if you have questions, you can call right in here and we can get more specific, 615-737-9986. Now, what I'm going to do is go into the three D's that you need to be thinking about when it comes to investing. The first one is we diversify. The second one is we add discipline to it. And the third one is something called dollar cost averaging. So let's talk about diversification. I'll probably have enough time to cover that before the break. And then after that, we will move into the rest of it. So what does diversification mean? Well, you know, I told you earlier, you've got bonds, you got stocks, you got international, you got small, medium, large stocks, you've got balance. Well, you got all this kind of stuff. You got pure cash, like at the bank, that kind of thing. So think about this. At any given time, if you're diversified, you're always going to be right. All right. Some portion will be right. Let me give you an example. Mid-sized stocks in 2009, small stocks in 2010, bonds in 2011, large cap value stocks in 2012, small caps in 2013, large cap value again in 2014, large cap growth in 15, small caps in 16, large caps in 17. And guess what? Finally won. Just cash, leaving your money in the bank. What about that? Cash in 2018 because of the markets were down all along. So what happens is if you go in there and you diversify yourself, you're always going to have some good things and bad things. But over a long period of time, what's going to end up happening is you're probably going to do okay. I would not be, and what I'm comparing that to is to having it, say, in one stock, or, you know, you're going to listen to the latest cram course on how you're going to get rich investing in the stock market, stuff like that. So anyway, my name is Roy Matlock Jr. I hope this is helping you. The call-in number is 615-737-9986, and we will be right back. We're back. Roy Matlock Jr. here, and we have been talking about the three D's of investing money. If you have a question, you can call in at 737-9986, and also you can send me an email. I've had several emails, roy@roymatlockjr.com. Had a guy call, email in. He says, I own a small business and want to set up a retirement account. What should I do? And that question comes up a lot because there's different types of retirement plans. you know, you're not a big company. How do you go about doing it? So the first question I always ask people is, how many employees do you have? You know, in my business, I've got a bunch of independent contractors, but not that many employees. And so in many cases, let's say you're a real estate agent, or say you are a plumber and you own your own and things like that, or you have independent contractors working for you, you might consider what's called a SEP, an SEP, and that is a retirement plan where you contribute yourself. You have to cover your employees only if they've been with you 3 out of the last 5 years. And so, and you can put 25% of your profit pre-tax into one of these things, up to a little over $50,000 that you can put in. So let's say you're out there, you're working, you're making $150,000 a year, which you should be if you're owning your own business. I mean, if you're out there doing it, taking the risk, come on, you should be making money, right? Otherwise, you just get a job and get all your benefits. And so let's say you're making $150,000 and you put 25% in, that's almost $40,000 that you're able to put in. That's $40,000 off your income taxes that you don't have to pay taxes on. So now you get taxed on 110, probably in 30% tax bracket. So that little decision may have saved you $10,000, $12,000 in income taxes. And so what we want to do is take advantage of our retirement plans. And so if you have questions, you can do that. You can also visit roymatlockjr.com, and you will be able to download a lot of the things. I have one great piece called How Money Works that you can go in there. Actually, I have one in there for your children called How Money Works for Kids. And another question is, what is a target date mutual fund? We talked about mutual funds. What is a target date mutual fund? Well, years ago, back in the days, you know, I was around, you know, it's interesting. I go back so far that the first stock market crash, 1987, I had my license. How about that? And people thought, oh, the world is ending. You know, it was about 2000 at the time when it took the crash. And, you know, now we're up over 25,000. But anyway, the point being is that back in the early 2000s, we had the technology, what we'll call bust. And during that time, a lot of companies were pushing their stock, individual stocks, and all this kind of stuff. And then people were all heavy in technology companies. And then when it fell apart, you know, they lost a bunch of money. And so they came out with a law called ERISA. ERISA is a law for basically saying to companies, look, you got to educate your employees, and otherwise you could have some liability yourself. And so they went to the mutual fund companies and they said, how can we do this? And the mutual funds came back and said, look, we'll just build a target date fund. That way it doesn't matter how educated or uneducated the employee is, because, you know, big companies have everybody from the very lowest paid to the CEO. And what we'll do is we'll say, we'll put a target on there and we'll manage it for them. So if it's a target date 2020, that means you're getting ready to retire. It'll be much more conservative if you chose a target 2020. Now, if you're young and you've got 30 years out there, you might do a target date 2050. Now, how do they do this? Well, those target dates, they might have mostly stocks on a 2050, but then they might have 50% bonds on a 2020, or even maybe more than that. And as you get older, you don't have to do anything, and the target date, it readjusts. And what it is, it's really a target until you retire, the number of years you have till retire. So if you're 10 years to retirement, you're going to be more conservative than 20 years to retirement. If you're 5 years, you're going to be way more conservative. And so what happens is, do I think target dates are a good option for people? Yeah, I think it is. For most people, they don't pay attention to it. And you know that if you put it in a target date fund, it's probably not a bad idea. Now, could you actually possibly do better than that? Sure, if you're able to go in there and pick it and, you know, and pay attention to it and reallocate it, do all those kind of things. But a target date fund, I think, was a good idea when it came to helping people with their retirement plans. And so, you know, that's the thing. So we go in maybe a SEP for a small business, and then we pick out some asset allocation funds that go along with what we do. So if you remember earlier in the show, I did talk about allocating your money across and diversifying your money, and that's kind of what this thing does. One of those target funds will do that. They'll also diversify if you buy some of these portfolios as well. And then there's people that say, well, I'll just buy the index, and the index is another way of doing it. The positive of the index, it's very low cost. The negative is that it's always in the index. And so some of the funds that are professionally managed have been able to beat the index. And so you might look at that when you're out there doing it. But anyway, the idea behind doing any of this kind of stuff is that you want to get educated. Today, I put out a lot of information. And I hope that some of you are out there saying, man, I'm going to take some notes on this stuff. This is good stuff because, you know, I take notes. I make notes before I do this. I'm not just rambling along, but I try to give you good information which will allow you to make good decisions. And if you make good decisions with your money, one day you will say, wow, things are going pretty good. I have no car payments. I have no credit card payments. I've got a couple hundred grand saved. You know, my house is getting paid down. And, you know, I'm doing pretty good. You know, I'm starting to accumulate something. And then we have the stock market going up. And, oh, wow, here we go. So let's talk about discipline in the stock market. We'll give you some numbers. 82 years of experience in the stock market. The average annual return from 1937 was 10.2%. All right, how about that? 10.2%. We talked about the rule of 72, 10.2%, 10 into 72. Every 7.2 years at 10.2%, your money would double if you were able to get a steady 10.2%, 7.2 years. So if you put in 10 and go to 20, then it go to 40 and so on. And man, I mean, think about that. And the stock market's returns were up 76% of the time during that time. So if you put your money in 3 out of 4 years, you made money. So why doesn't everybody do well in the markets? What's the problem here? 10% average since 1937, 76% of the time the market goes up. Why don't they do well? Let me give you some examples of things that go on. Of the years the markets went up, 62 years, the average up was 19.4%. You made almost 20% return. Every year the market went up on average, it averaged 19.4%. But in order to get that 10.2, you had to also live through the 20 negative years that went down an average of 12.2%. There were 3 years that went down 24% or more. How about that? 1937, 34.7%. 1974, 26.3%. And in 2008, minus 37%. How about that? You had to put up with that. You had to be disciplined enough to do that. There's between 18 and 24%. There's 1 year, 2002, 22% down. Between 12 and 18%. 1973 is down 14.7%. We had 10 years that it was down between 6 and 12% and 5 years between 0 and 6%. So what happens is, in order to do that, you have to have discipline. So what is the discipline? The discipline is, when you were in the market in 2008 and the market went down 37%, guess what you did? You hung tight. You just kept putting your money in there. You did what I'm going to talk about next, dollar cost average. And then you were lucky enough, get this, to see a return of 26.5, okay, in 2009. How about that? And then you had a 32% in 2013. Matter of fact, there's been 19 years that you were up 24% or more. So what is this all saying? What it says is, the first one is diversify. The second one is, you've got to have discipline in your thinking so you don't make bad choices at the wrong time. You know, one great statement I read, most people make all of their money during bear markets. They just don't know it at the time it's happening. That's where they make their money. Because what was happening, they were buying on a consistent basis when the market was down. Let me give you an example. If you bought in 2009 and 2008 was down 37%, you were buying at 2008 at 37% discount to the market where it was in 2007. So what happened in 2009 versus 2008? So what happens is, guys, when you're out there, you want to make sure that you are asset allocated and you are in something that carries some risk with it. I don't mean if you're at or near retirement, you're going to be all in the stock market. What I mean is that you have to sit down with somebody, or if you do it yourself, and you got to really decide what you can stomach. And if you stomach 10, you want 10.2 over the last 62 years, that's what you had to stomach, the down years and the up years. And I don't know what the future holds, but I can say this, chances are It's going to be about like it's always been. The market's going to go up. The market's going to go down. And you have to apply discipline to that. And so I always tell people, just hang in there. This may be a great chance for you when the market takes a tank for you to be able to do something, okay, to really improve your situation. Then the last thing is something called dollar cost averaging. Now, the cool thing about if you're in a retirement plan and it's payroll deducted, or you're in a regular retirement account where you do it on your own, where you're having it pulling out of your checking account. And by the way, guys, I recommend you do that. If you're wanting to get ahead, don't say I'm going to do my retirement plan, you know, at the end of the year or stuff like that. Just decide, you know, I'm going to put in $6,000 a year. That's $500 a month. And so what happens is put on an automatic draft and have it automatically pull out your money. And then what happens is over the next 12 months, you did it. The market went down, you're happy, and you're able to accumulate and set a goal and get there. 737-9986. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. We're going to our last segment today. Thank you. Segment here for the day. Roy Matlock Jr. We are talking money, and hopefully you're learning something today. If you would like additional information on some of the information I covered today on the show, you can go to roymatlockjr.com. You can also sign up for the podcast, and I think I've got about 15 shows on there right now. We'll be posting this one as well, and so you can kind of look back through it. And we have a couple of downloads that I think are great. One is called How Money Works, and then I've been told for many, many years they should teach this stuff in high school. Well, they're never going to do that. And so we put something together for you called How Money Works for Kids. So if you've got teenagers, you know, one of the things I did was my entire family came in and to what I call a family financial workshop. And all the teenagers and everybody, all my sisters, three sisters and brother, their kids and grandkids and nieces and nephews. And I think we had 27 people show up, and I gave them a 2-hour how-to on everything. I thought, hey, who should learn it more? Everybody should know it, but for sure I should get my family to know it. And so I've actually done some of those workshops for my clients to where they bring in all their kids and grandkids and everything. And, you know, we I always tell them, just bribe them a little bit, tell them you'll open them a mutual fund up and put, you know, $200 or $300 in it. And then they'll have something just for showing up. And then one day when you get old and you start thinking about giving that money away, at least you're going to give it to somebody that's not going to go blow it because they have no idea what to do. And they take your entire life's work and go through it in about 5 minutes. How about that? Buying something stupid or doing something stupid. And so anyway, so the last piece of getting ahead was in the 3 Ds is, of course, dollar cost averaging. Dollar cost averaging has a lot of things to go along with it. Let's say you have $100,000 sitting in the bank right now, and you're thinking, hey, I want to get in the market. Well, you know, and you haven't been an investor, or even if you have been an investor, you might want to consider dollar cost averaging that money in. So what does that mean? You just take, rather than putting $100,000 at once, you take $100,000 and have $8,000 a month be pulled out and put into an investment over the next 12 months. And then you're actually hoping the market goes down during that time. How about that? You say, man, I hope the market goes down, because if it does, I'm buying more at a lower price. That's called dollar cost averaging, because one day if the market does like it's done in the past, it always ends up making new highs, and then you've been buying at discounts. And so the 3 Ds are discipline, dollar cost averaging, and diversification. What else do we have going on here? Let's talk real quick about the things that I'm going to give you three letters that you can write down and remember. And if you are young and getting started, you want to do PMA. That's Protect, Manage, and Accumulate. If you are At or near retirement, you want to do the three P's, protect, protect, protect. That's what we're going to do. And so what does that mean? Well, let's see. What is protect, manage, and accumulate? Well, step number one, the foundation, if you're young and at any age, if you're wanting to get started, is you have to have a defense. What's the defense? It's getting on a cash flow plan, spending plan, budget, whatever you want to call it, where you spend less than you make, and you save money. You have an emergency fund to keep you from going in debt. This is the protect. We're protecting. We're protecting our income by managing our money. We're protecting against a disaster with an emergency fund, right? We're protecting against consumer debt because we manage. We don't have cars, credit cards, everything like that because we have a budget. So now we have a budget, emergency fund. We have no consumer debt. We've eliminated the cars, the credit cards. You know, as I was at lunch just a minute ago, my daughter's like, yeah, Dad, I'm getting ready to get me a new car. And I said, really? What are we doing? She says, I'm getting a 2008 with 70,000 miles on it. I'm like, there you go. That's the way you do it. You don't go buy a new car. A new car is the biggest wreck that you'll ever get with a car, and that's driving off the lot brand new and losing money and financing it. So anyway, so you do that, and then you buy the right insurances, and that's the protect side. You know, life insurance, term life insurance, health insurance, home and auto insurance, where you have high deductibles and high liability limits, things like that. And so that's protect, manage, okay, your money, and now we're going to accumulate it. You're going to set up your retirement plans, your college plans for your kids. You bought a house. You may put it on a 15-year mortgage, get you a little bit lower interest rate. I'm not so about paying the house off quicker, but generally speaking, the interest rate is lower if you put it on a 15-year mortgage. All right, so there's the protect, manage, accumulate. Now, if you're at retirement or near retirement, we're going to go into protect, protect, protect. What are we going to protect? We're going to protect our income. We're going to protect ourselves against disaster, biggest disaster being a long-term care stay where you go in the nursing home, things like that. And we're going to protect against inflation. You know, you can't go total conservative to the point that you don't have any stock market exposure. You've got to have something. You know, people say, well, what about rental real estate? That's okay. I have no issue with that. You know, if you own a rental property, here's what I found to be true. You don't have to have 50% equity in it. But if you do have 50% equity, generally speaking, you know what you can do? You can always rent your property. Even when the market's tight, you can rent it for less. How about that? And you can still come out and you can fund because you don't have a big payment. I see people go in there, they buy real estate thinking they're going to flip it. Real estate's a long-term investment. And so you buy that real estate and you put 10% down or something like that, put a little bit down. And then when the market turns on you and it's tight, now you've got vacancies, but you need to rent it for too much because you got too much in it, that kind of thing. And so if you've got rental property, that's cool. I think you should be thinking like, let's get 50% equity. So real quick, I'm going to take a caller before we finish up, and then we will be out of here. So, Reese, real quick, are you there, Reese?
Yeah, hey. I could call you later on if you don't have time. You know, once you're getting there, like 55 plus, 55 to 65, and you've got few years left in retirement, and you cannot take up and down on stock market because, 10 years, sure, you may have no return and so on.
Right.
So what do you suggest to people who are in retirement or close to retirement where, with interest rate getting down that low, actually, could they get decent income?
I'm going to give you, and this is a broad answer.
Or I could call you after the show.
Yeah, you can do that. And I'm going to do this. I'll answer this and real quick. I'll let you go, and then I'll answer this because we've only got just a short period of time. But you're welcome to give our office a call as well, or go to roymatlingjr.com. So with that, what do you do when you're right here at retirement and you're worried about, getting income and stuff like that? I always tell people, the key element to this is that you've got one option where you could keep some of your money set aside And that money is set aside to where if we do have a down market, you could pull from that money, which is might even be in something very, very conservative where you don't have the market risk. It's one option. And then as long as the market is doing well, guess what you do? You're pulling from your accounts that have growth opportunities in it. Second thing you can do is you can consider some different annuities. And we're going to run out of time today, but maybe we'll do that next week. But, hey, guys, thanks for listening. I will be back next Sunday afternoon. My name's Roy Matlock Jr. And visit RoyMatlockJr.com and do some of those downloads. Let's go win the money game.